Did I kill this time?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's on. Thank you. Okay, I'll let you know. That was the question.
Okay. How did you become involved in politics?
Well, you won't believe it. I said it's the most unromantic story in the world. I was active with the labor movement. I was secretary of the tobacco workers local 185 for 11 years. But in the meantime, I helped organize back before the FBLCIO merged. Helped organize the commission, the women's auxiliary. And had done this statewide because then we didn't have too many women in the unions, or a lot of the unions were non-employee unions. So in 1949, the labor movement had gotten together and decided to support John Y. Brown for Congress, or whichever one of those races he was running. And we did it successfully, so they began to feel that they were pretty good politicians and would like to try to get out on their own a little bit. So they got together, the FL and the CIO, that year and decided they'd run one person for each office open, one labor person for each office that was open that year. And when they got to the legislative race in my district, they looked around and couldn't find anyone that had been done anything politically at all. So they asked me to run, and I asked my husband what he thought about it, and said, I think if you do, you've lost your mind. But at that time, it was, the legislative races in Louisville were not as hard to run as out in the state, because you've got districts and Democratic clubs and things like that to run in. So I ran without any idea of winning, and believe it or not, out of 53 offices that year, we won two. My race in the legislature and won in the one for the Baltimore race. And of course, I stayed in the legislature 3 terms, and then Governor Chandler came along and decided that he wanted me to be running for Secretary of State. And I said, no, thanks, just the same. I like the legislature, and I don't think I could run a statewide race. This was in December. And then in June, he came back and asked me again to run for Secretary of State. It was on Monday night, you know, and he gave me the Friday to make up my mind. And on Tuesday, he told the press. So I came home that night. We had Governor Chandler and Louisville all that day taking him through the different plans and things. And then we had a big joint rally for him to speak that night. And at the end of the meeting, he said, come up here. And I thought that he was going to say thank you, since I'd been the only girl that had been with him all that day. And instead of that, out of the clear blue sky, he said, I just want all of you to be the first. Oh, I want to be the one to tell you that this is the next Secretary of State of Kentucky.
So,
and again, I went home that night because I hadn't had a chance to talk to my husband. And said, Raymond, I've got something to tell you. And he said, you don't have to. I just heard it on the 10:30 news.
It's a great
story. The other things I've done because I wanted to do them.
Yeah.
I said I'd had 3 terms of Secretary of State and 2 of State Treasurer, and I thought it was about time to try something different. So at the risk of getting beaten because I was a woman, I took a chance and made it.
Are you
originally from Louisville? No, I'm originally from Lumpkinville, Kentucky. But I've lived in Louisville since I was 2 years old, so I guess you'd say I'm a Louisvillian, if anything. My parents lived on the farm, and when I was 2 years old, they did what a lot of parents were doing about in those days. You felt you could go, had to go to town.
Yeah.
So they moved to Louisville, and my dad went to work for the Louisville Gas and Electric Company and worked for them until he retired. Electrician.
What obstacles did you face as a woman in politics?
Not as many as people thought that you would. Occasionally, well, I guess I had more at the first session of this last legislature. When I had a bill in the legislature I wanted out and asked about it, because I'm chairman of the Committee on Committees, and Tom Garrett, who's a majority chair leader in the Senate, informed me that I wasn't going to get the bill, and nobody ever told him he was, that I was a member of the Senate. And I said, well, just happens, Tom, and I may not be a member of the Senate, but I'm darn sure we've been a governor for 4 years. I might add, we got the bill, but I didn't do it right that time. But a few times I've had people say, well, you can't do so-and-so because you're a woman, but that's not been very true. I think people really now begin to think of me more as an office holder rather than whether I'm a woman or not.
Yeah, absolutely. What advice would you give to a woman contemplating a career in
politics? The same advice I would give to a man, to be active in your community. I think you almost have to. This is the way you get your start. You don't just jump up and say, guess what, I'm going to run for something and then win it. But the more people know you and understand you and think how you think, I still try to find out how that you feel about different things. I'd be active civically with all your whatever areas you can. Churches, I'm not saying now churches, use church just for politics but I said, I guess what I'm really saying is that you don't go to church just because you're a Christian. You go because it makes you a better Christian and you help other people become more interested in. And the same thing's true with politics. You don't belong to Democrat clubs just for the sake of belonging. You do it because you work harder with a bunch of people doing the same thing. That's what I'm really trying to say.
Okay, Donicella, we know you've been an avid supporter of the EIA and almost single-handedly pushed this thing. It's like, do you believe the EIA will be rescinded in this session?
Not if I live and can keep it from happening.
You think it will?
Okay. I'm awfully disappointed that the John Birch Society is talking into the thing. And of course, it's an emotional issue. It has absolutely nothing at all to do with homosexual marriages. Or lesbians, or abortion. ERA is exactly what it says it is. It's ridiculous. After 200 years, that women are still second-class citizens. You know, black men were allowed to vote 50 years before women could vote. And as long as there's some statutes that say there's certain things a woman cannot do, we're second-class citizens. And this is the reason that wasn't. Let me correct one thing. I did not single-handedly do that. I had a lot of fine help. There's many fine women in the state of Kentucky that feel and do the same things I do. I just was in the position to be the leader rather than just the follower, but we had some mighty fine girls working together. And we had some men. We had some good members of the legislature. David Kim was always on my side.
Okay, what are your views on constitutional revision?
I'm again. So, let me put it another way. There are some things in our Constitution that ought to be changed. I'd be the first one to say that we don't need an election every year in Kentucky. One every other year, the way other states do it, would be the sensible way. I know I'm in somebody's campaign every single year. There's just no out of it in our state. A $500,000 debt limit is also a ridiculous situation today. But the thing about it is, every so often, the so-called revisionists start, let's throw it all out and start over. And then they use all these terrible things that are wrong with our Constitution, and then when it gets beaten, which it's done every time, you never see another thing about all those horrible things being straightened out. I've made a promise that, and I talked to the first person I debated on it, was Richard Lewis from Benton, Kentucky. He used to be a member of the legislature and the governor's administrative assistant. I just said, Richard, offer you a challenge. In the event that this one's beaten, which I think it will you join me in trying to see that there's some changes made? There's no reason to say, well, it's too slow to amend. There's any reason in this world why we cannot put in 5 amendments at a time, or 3, or whatever number you want to come up with, and Richard agreed that he'll join me up to 7. I honestly think 5 would be about as many as you want, and I know it's been on the ballot a number of times and it's been beaten, but the truth about it is we've just not gotten out and worked on it. I've never heard Kentucky turn down a good amendment if they feel it's good enough that somebody will get out and go to work for it. I remember that the year that the sheriffs wanted to succeed themselves, they put in the cluster amendment, which allowed the governor and the lieutenant governor and most of the other officers to succeed themselves, and I agree that governor ought to have two terms. It takes you that long to get your feet on the ground in any one of the offices. But the state officials thought the sheriffs wanted to succeed themselves so badly they'd get out and do the work. And the sheriffs thought by putting them all in together that they do, the state people would do the work, and nobody went to work. And that's exactly, it's a normal thing not to, you almost have to truly lobby in a minute, because of where it goes, it's either up on top of the voting machine or down in the bottom. And consequently, people that really intend to vote for them in many cases just forget it.
Yeah. Okay, could you give us an idea? First of all, I know you can't go into all of it, but some of your duties are, and what an average day for the attorney general is.
Here's one of the average days. That's this one. Truly, as far as the constitutional duties of our office, there are very few. Years ago, I guess Emerson Dog Beecham was the last lieutenant governor that had nothing to do. The lieutenant governor in those days didn't even come to Frankfort unless they just wanted to, because the governor then, you didn't have revenue sharing, you didn't have this all the war on poverty funds and that sort of thing. So consequently, the governor didn't take off as often as he does these days. So, Governor Chandler, when he was elected in 55, just simply said he thought it was ridiculous to have an elected official with nothing to do. So he revamped office and gave the lieutenant governor the head of economic development and then legislative research commission. And he stayed that away through two governors, while Bert Combs was governor and Governor Chandler, which gave a full-time job for the lieutenant governor. Well, then when Ned Breathitt was elected, and Harry Waterfield was elected lieutenant governor another time, Ned was mad at Harry Waterfield for some reason, and he took economic development away from him, but he did leave him legislative research, which by that time had grown to the point where it was pretty much a full-time job anyway. And it stayed that way then, where the lieutenant governor actually had something to do up until this last session. And then Gene legislated his own bill to take. He said that the legislature wanted to run their own business. So he put his bill in and passed it to take the lieutenant governor off of LRC. So it left the office again back the way it was when we went happy and redid it. The lieutenant governor is automatically a member of some of the committees. The vice chairman of the Toll Road Authority, you're vice chairman of the Governor's Commission on Agriculture, you're on the, well, there are half a dozen minor committees, I forget which ones are which, where you just meet occasionally and not full-time thinking. Of course, after I got to fussing about something to do, the governor put me on the Commission on Education, which is a national commission that has three people or four from every state in the nation on it, who I think they average about two meetings a year to sit down and talk about the trends in education, which was the best way to go about doing certain things and what other states are doing that are good. And then I'm on the Southern Growth Policy Committee, which is a commission of all the 15 southern states. And what really brought them into being is that they woke up one day and found out that because of Appalachia, the South was getting a major portion of some of the federal money, in the North and the East got together and said, hey, let's get a computer and figure out how we can get this one worked out so we get the most. So in self-defense, they created the Southern Growth Policy Committee. They're not only working on being sure they don't lose all the federal funds, but they're trying to get together and work on the energy problems to see what can be done. And because, if you say again, it's like church. If you're all trying the same thing and going the same direction, sometimes you come up with better things. And I'm enjoying both of the committees. It was not what I asked them. I thought I was hoping you'd give me a regular duty here in the office. I mean, you see, these are sort of ombudsman deals. You help people if you can, and of course part of this grew out of the fact that I've been a state official for 20 years and people have gotten the habit of saying, well, nobody else is going to help, let's go see Phil and Stovall.
Right, you've got that reputation for help, there's no doubt about it. Do you feel the state legislature should meet every year?
No, ma'am. I can remember when I was in the legislature that I overheard the Commissioner of Finance tell someone that we ought to meet 2 days every 60 years instead of 67. and I was highly insulted because I thought he was denigrating the legislature. But frankly, the reason I said I don't think we ought to meet every year is that I've changed sides and I know exactly what that man meant. While the legislature is in session, virtually everything else in state government stops because they're the number one people while they're in session. And consequently, I think we can do without that much stopping. Kentucky has enough laws. We don't need to do a whole bunch of other laws every time you turn around. I would not mind to see them separate the legislature and maybe let them meet 30 days one, like at one time, and then 30 days another time if they want to do it that way. You know, one of the reasons, one of the suggestions have been that we do 30 days to put in the bill and then come back later after we've had time to go over and carefully, and then do the 30 days to pass the bill. And this I would not oppose at all. But you virtually got a continuing legislature anyway, since they meet monthly on all the committees. I think the only bad part of this, and I don't know whether it would change or not, if you really had an annual session. I've noticed that in coming to the committee meetings, and most of the legislators attend them religiously, but it causes them to be a little bit careless when the bills get in, because they assume, because they've already worked on them, that they know what's in them. But sometimes when they get drafted at the last minute, they don't realize they don't necessarily say what they intended to say. And consequently, they pass some bad bills since they've been continuous committee meetings and not being more careful to be sure that what they worked on is what was in the bill they're actually passing.
Okay, one last question. Can we see Thomas Stovall as our next governor of Kentucky?
I sincerely hope that's what you're going to see. If I live long enough and nothing happens, I'm going to be a candidate and hopefully I'll be the governor. I'd be foolish to get this close and then quit.
Right. I'd love to see you as governor.
Yeah.
Any prospective running
mates? Actually, practically all the candidates that have announced for lieutenant governor are friends of mine. I could almost take any one of them. But I'd be kind of foolish to choose any one right away and then alienate all the other families and friends, because that's what would happen. I would think I'll do what the governor did. I'll just wait till getting close to time and then take a real good look on who looks like the closest and the best one, and I'll take either one of them. Kentucky's a funny state, and a lot of this may change. There was a time when if the governor was going to be from eastern Kentucky, you usually found yourself a running mate in west Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Or vice versa. And now, I don't know, people really, normally you say that you don't have much of a chance because you came from Louisville. I think the only governor we've ever had from Louisville was Lawrence Weatherby. And of course, he was one of these people that walked into the first year because Senator Clemens went to Washington as the United States Senator after Senator Underwood died. And of course, they gave you a year to build your forces. And of course, when the Unionists had the same advantage, and Wendell went to Washington, and it gave him a year to build. But whether or not they'll take some of the candidates, I mean, for instance, Joe Prather is a fine person, and I think he'd probably make a real good lieutenant governor. But he's from Elizabethtown, and I'm from Louisville. Whether or not the people would take us as a team remains to be seen. I mean, this is the only kind of thinking that you're doing now.
Yeah.
And I say most of them I could be happy with, other than, I hate to say it, I would not be happy with Bill Heber, but other than that, and the ones that have been so far, I could work well with it.
So we don't feel that Thomas Stovall caught home that ticket when you go over to the Kentucky?
I think Todd's got his own look put out for him right now. Yeah. I would say that two of us come from Louisville. I don't think Kentucky's ready for Jefferson. And of course, one of the things you've got to remember about Jefferson County, on top of it, Jefferson County, by being the only first-class city, and actually do pay about 60% of all the taxes, but it's always caused the rest of the state to be a little bit jealous of us. Well, I would say that Todd Hallenbach and Stovall would not be the best ticket in the world, simply because of people, not because we maybe couldn't do a good job, but simply because of where we both come from.
Well, it's been great talking to you. Go ahead and share. Oh. There we go.